Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/achieve today.
Cool fact, a crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Also, you can get health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. UnitedHealthcare short-term insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
Hi, this is Billie Jean King.
This is Marion Bartoli.
I'm Mats Wilander.
This is Mary Carrillo.
This is Pam Shriver.
This is Yannick Noah, and you're listening to the Tennis Podcast.
Hello and welcome to the Tennis Podcast live from Wimbledon, where play has just been completed for the night over on centre court. Novak Djokovic is one of those people, we've all got friends like this, that give them a deadline and they respond to it brilliantly. He knew there was a curfew tonight and he got that job done just under the wire of curfew. Three straight sets over Stan Wawrinka. Turns out Stan Wawrinka is a man of his word. He wasn't a threat to win the Wimbledon title, as it turned out.
I was going to say, it's difficult to know exactly where to start with the things that I got wrong last night. But that one's certainly near the top of the list. You're right. I agree with you. I think Djokovic knew that barring something out of his control, he was going to get that done tonight. And he was going to be ultra efficient. There's no shenanigans. And he actually, I think, even gave himself some breathing room. He was so awesome for those first two sets. And we've seen him do it before. That's a period of time where he just would play Federer and Murray and just go up two sets to love in next to no time and just dash all the hopes of the hype merchants like myself. And here it was just get the curfew out of the way. And then actually, I think he took his foot off the gas a bit in the third even. I'm not saying he let Stan back into it, but he was definitely not on it as much as he was in those first two. I think he could have finished that quicker.
Such a marker of Novak Djokovic's incredible longevity, isn't it? That Stan Wawrinka is his contemporary and was his bogeyman. And here they both are. Look, Stan Wawrinka is still a great tennis player, but Djokovic is better than when he was losing to Stan Wawrinka at Slams. And Wawrinka is, let's face it, worse, which is normal at 37 years of age. I think he is, might even be 38, but that's what's normal. The Wawrinka thing is normal. What Djokovic is doing, not normal.
Yeah, no, that I actually had the exact same thought. You know, we used to be so excited about Wawrinka Djokovic matches at Slams, and now this to me never felt like it really would be close. As soon as the match started, Novak Djokovic created a few break points in the very first return game that he had. He didn't take them, but it was a marker that, okay, he's fine against Stan Wawrinka, to be quite honest. And yeah, I mean, he's won over 50% of the slams that he's entered in his 30s, Novak Djokovic. And
what?
Yeah, I looked that up during this match because I was having that thought.
Just look that up.
It's absolutely insane how much more kind of efficient he's got in his 30s. And that was the word that came to mind to describe those two first sets. You know, we were struck by the level of Andy Murray and Stefanos Tsitsipas when we were watching that on centre court yesterday and again today. And it made me realise, yeah, that was a high level, but it's nowhere near the level that Novak Djokovic is playing at. He's playing at a higher level and he's making it look easier. It was all an ordeal for Andy Murray and Stefanos Tsitsipas. And this was just Novak Djokovic doing what he does. It seemed to be coming easy to him, and that's such an advantage that he just has over everyone else.
David, you commentated today on Djokovic's next round opponent, Hubert Hurkacz. He has taken a set off Djokovic at Wimbledon before, which counts as jeopardy in Novak Djokovic matches at the moment, doesn't it?
He was very good today. Hubert Hurkacz in beating Lorenzo Musetti, who wasn't good. So, I mean, you take that as you will. But, I mean, that match had Hurkacz serving fantastically well throughout. He hit, I think he hit 14 aces, and he's going to need to hit more than that to beat Djokovic. He really does have a bigger game than I perhaps realised until I watched it up close. I don't think I've seen him that much up close before, and I was taken by how efficient he is, how hard that serve is, and he was just really good. And Musetti, once he started to lose his way on his serve, the rest of the game followed. It's like my serve's not working. I had two double faults in a row from 40-15 up, lost his serve, and then the rest of the game just fell apart. And he has no poker face at all. He, you know, Alcaraz goes two sets of love down. He's bouncing out of the chair and he's ready. Right, come on then, let's throw down for set number three. Well, Musetti looked beaten when he walked out of a set three, and that was that. If Hurkacz could play as well as he can play, he could give a good account of himself against Djokovic.
That's David Law hype man, ladies and gentlemen. If Hurkacz plays the best he can possibly play, he can give a good
account. Yeah, I think he could win a set. You know, I think he's a really good player, and he's a complete player. Pretty complete. But Djokovic is just better. I mean, he's just better in every single way. And the thing is, it feels like Djokovic, in some ways, is actually getting better.
Yeah.
In terms of his economy and efficiency and his use of mental strength to actually... I think the big problem is Hurkacz would come out and just be overwhelmed by the aura of Djokovic. This is a new thing to me, Djokovic using his aura.
Yeah, and Hurkacz doesn't have... Oh, it's that time of the night, folks.
In around 15 minutes. Way to the exit gates. Take all your belongings with you. We hope you've enjoyed your day at Wimbledon. Pleasant and safe journey home. Thank you.
The premium hospitality and experience provider.
I didn't know they were going to get a mention, did they? Okay.
Wow. Gosh, we've peaked far too soon with that, Matt. That was
it's the same every day.
Absolutely extraordinary.
He's looking at whether Novak Djokovic has beaten 50% of his Grand Slams in his 30s. He can certainly handle that.
I think what I was going to say was Bublik. Bublik is the interesting player lurking in Djokovic's section. He won today. I'm not saying Bublik is going to beat Djokovic, but he can scramble some eggs.
I'm no longer worried about the limp.
Right, great.
But no, look, you're right. In as much as he will just come out and have a laugh. I mean, he'll just go out and have fun. Mm. And that can be dangerous.
Yeah, and whereas Hurkacz, this is what I was going to say before Matt's... What was that?
I don't know.
Matt's auditioning for a new job.
He doesn't have main character syndrome, Hubert Hurkacz, does he? He's not going to go out there and impose himself. He's
be quite interesting, you know. I was commentating with Nick Munro on the TV, and he'd spoken quite a lot today to Hurkacz's coach, Craig Boynton, who he knows quite well, and to just get an insight into what it sounds like Boynton is trying to do with Hurkacz to get him to feel his size and to play up to his ability and not shrink. You know, he says he's sending him out to play big tennis, to play grass court tennis, to hit his forehand, to go for shots and be an alpha out there. Because I think too often he allows himself to get into a cat and mouse match, a grind. He's had 38 tie breaks this year. He had six consecutive five-set matches at the Australian Open and the French Open. It was extraordinary. And on one level, you might say credit to him for all those battles. But I also think, well, that's not going to get you where you want to be.
Yeah, I think Novak Djokovic would sign for three tie breaks against Hubert Hurkacz.
Against anybody.
Yeah.
He's signing for tie breaks against anybody.
Back himself to win them all. I mean, he actually wasn't very good in the tie break that we just watched against Stan Wawrinka.
Made some actual unforced errors.
He did, yeah. A terrible drop shot at one stage. But, you know, he did manage to regroup in time and win it. And yeah, he doesn't need to prove himself in tie breaks. He's already done that.
A word for David Law, ladies and gentlemen, a man that did his Hubert Hurkacz research this morning, clearly.
Yes, that's correct.
Let's stick with the men, seeing as that's where we are, and let's pick up from the cliffhanger of yesterday. When we recorded last night, Andy Murray was leading 2-1 over Stefanos Tsitsipas. They came back second match of the day on centre court today, following on from Carlos Alcaraz's victory over Alexander Muller. And Andy Murray lost the two sets that were played, and he lost the match. It was quite a similar match to yesterday. I think it picked up pretty much where it left off, obviously in different conditions, as we discussed last night and as was planned. The roof was open. It remained a completely serve-dominated match. There was one break, and it went to Stefanos Tsitsipas. The first set was a tie break. The second set was decided by one break of serve. And in the end, it came down, the difference was one tie break. Andy Murray broke the Stefanos Tsitsipas serve once. Stefanos Tsitsipas broke the Andy Murray serve once. I'm talking about over the course of the whole match, over the 2 days. And Tsitsipas won two tie breaks and Andy Murray won one. I'm sure that's very cold comfort to Andy Murray right now, who was disconsolate, furious in the press conference after that defeat. And I can absolutely understand why. What is ever present in his mind and pretty much the first words out of him in that press conference were, you just don't know how many more opportunities you're going to have, especially not ones where he's got his body in optimum shape with that metal hip at 36 years of age. It's a gaping opportunity missed, particularly because the tennis was there. David, you watched most of these two sets.
Yeah, you sent me off out with your pass into the press seats for the first time this championships, and I was
to ruin Charlie Eccleshare's afternoon.
Yes, we decided to test out what it would be like to sit behind me after last night's show, and Charlie got pictorial evidence that it's a nightmare. You don't have much of a view.
It's on our Instagram, folks.
Yeah, Charlie saw about a third of this match.
Yeah.
Behind David's head.
So I was like a kid in those seats because of the... usually when I'm commentating, I'm behind a glass window. And yes, I've got earphones on to hear the court effects. It's just not the same. Being out there, especially for an Andy Murray match or any match where there's a massive atmosphere like that, it was electric. I had goosebumps even when the players just walked out. And honestly, I was not remotely concerned for Andy Murray's chances all the way through that set. He was in control of it. I wrote down various very short notes to myself as it was going on. One of them was grass court know-how. One of them had it, one of them didn't. Tsitsipas would play well and then he would shank and then he would overhit. And Murray was just playing within himself because he knows how to play on a grass court. But he didn't break. He didn't take a chance. And then, when it went to 3-3 in the tiebreak, I saw the best grass court point I've ever seen Stefanos Tsitsipas play. They went toe-to-toe, side-to-side. Murray asked every grass court question you can ask of a player who's maybe more comfortable on a hard court or a clay court. And Tsitsipas answered them all with deft touches, slices, recuperating in, recovering in positions on his forehand slice to just nudge it back over, and then eventually to take over and win the point. I mean, it was a double digit, I know it was probably 20 shot rally or something along that lines, and that gave him 4-3, and he didn't lose another point in the tiebreak. That was the difference as far as I could see, because he then took off and he took it away from Andy Murray.
The way Andy Murray might feel right now, though, is that he shouldn't have been in that tiebreak in the first place, because there was a moment, David, you were on court for this moment, 4-4 in the fourth set, 15-30 on the Tsitsipas serve, and a Murray return, cross court, short, dipping, or slicing, sliding onto the sideline underneath the umpire's chair. And it's called out by the line judge, and it's immediately confirmed, that call, by the umpire in the chair. So Andy Murray doesn't challenge, and as is customary now, what then happens for everybody watching on TV is that the Hawkeye replay comes up and shows that Andy Murray, had he challenged, would have been successful. That return was good and it might well have been a winner. And look, that would only have given him 15-40. Stefanos Tsitsipas was serving bombs today. It's not a given that he would have broken there. It's not a given that he would have won that point. But in Andy Murray's post-match press conference, he was asked about that point and about the fact that that return was indeed in, and he didn't know. He came to press very quickly after the defeat. I don't think he'd showered. He had his two big bags with him. It looked to me like he'd gone, maybe had a quick chat with his team, and then he was into the press conference room. And his face, when he heard the news that that shot was in and that he should have challenged, was extraordinary, actually. It was a really surreal, extraordinary moment in the press conference room. He questioned it, he queried it, he said it was in. And the journalist, I think it might have been Simon Briggs.
I think it was Neil McClemon who asked the question.
Right. And it was confirmed. And you just saw, and I'm sorry to anybody listening to this and not watching on YouTube, but I am going to take advantage of the fact that we're on camera here for a lot of you, because I'm not sure I can do it justice by describing his face. There was a beat, and then he just crumpled over the microphone, was clearly trying not to talk, trying to compose himself, but you could just see his jaw clenching and unclenching. And as I was discussing this moment with Charlie Eccleshare of The Athletic, the aforementioned Charlie Eccleshare, whose viewing experience was ruined by David Law today.
He may or may not have seen this return.
just to kind of check that he experienced that moment in the room the same way that I did. And he said, yeah, it was absolutely extraordinary, because Andy Murray's such a know-it-all in the press conference room, in a really great way, in a non-annoying way, but he's got all the stats. He's a student of the game. He knows more about his game than you do. I mean, he was a little... We detected a little element of sort of surprise and, oh, you're on to me, when we asked him... That's the royal we. When I asked him about Matt's pick up on his change of service motion the other day. He likes to know the most in the room. And that moment of vulnerability from Andy Murray in that situation, seeing that raw reaction, was quite something. And I do think he's going to be having... I think he's going to be an absolute nightmare to be around for weeks. I know he gets over losses quicker than he used to. I'm sure being at home, he doesn't have to travel anywhere now. He's got four kids. I'm sure that grounds him very quickly. But in the quiet of the night,
that's where I think he'll feel it. I think he'll be fine when he's around his family. But it'll be in those moments where he's thinking to himself, or maybe having a quiet dinner with somebody he trusts about this, or his wife, or whoever it is, that it hurts, that it's all wasted energy in the end and time.
Yeah, because for him to do what he's doing, for him to carry on his career in the state of health that he's in with that hip that is, you know, finishing, in his own words, he needs little moments of validation, doesn't he? He needs things like getting a big win over Stefanos Tsitsipas at Wimbledon. You know, that's what he's training for. That's what he's making the sacrifices for. And any little moment like this that makes some sort of, you know, sort of makes that harder for him with this call on the line there, he's going to feel that in the strongest possible way. And, you know, I totally understand why he's absolutely gutted about that. And yeah, he's had a run of good health in the last 6 months, 9 months or whatever, you know, and that had not been the case post hip resurfacing. He'd kept picking up little niggles in other parts of his body, and it finally felt like now he's in a state where his tennis is really good. He did play really well yesterday and today, but who knows what is, you know, around the corner, whether it's a dip in form, whether it's a dip in motivation or whether it's another injury. And it didn't feel like exactly now or never, because I do think, you know, we may well be in this position with Andy Murray again next year. He's defied a lot in his career.
But now ish or never.
Right. We're very near never.
Yeah. We're unfortunately approaching never. And he's as conscious of that as anyone. Interested to see how far Tsitsipas can go with this and how much he can use this win and the tennis that he played. He's got Laszlo Djere for a place in week 2 of Wimbledon, and the winner of that faces the winner of Christopher O'Connell against Christopher Eubanks, the Christopher-off. Hmm. Now, let's talk about Christopher Eubanks, shall we? He beat last year's semi-finalist Cam Norrie today in 4 sets. Biggest win of his career, carrying on his form from winning Mallorca the week before Wimbledon. He's 27 years old, and he's making his Wimbledon main draw debut.
He didn't even know where the Erangi practice courts were the other day.
Wow.
He had to ask.
He had to ask Pam Shriver.
Yeah.
Did he really?
Yeah.
She told us.
Oh, yeah.
Pam. Now, look, he came through the college route, didn't he? So, actually, he's only been pro 5 or 6 years, played for Georgia Tech. I'm sure they're great. And he had his big breakthrough in Miami earlier this year and in the lead up to Miami, and that was when he broke the world's top 100. And it's as a result of breaking the world's top 100 that we're seeing him here, and we're seeing him regularly on the tour. And he's been doing commentary for the Tennis Channel over the course of the last year, and he's been an absolute revelation and a massive hit, hasn't he?
Yes, and he said it's helped his tennis, David.
Oh,
as a commentator, I felt like that was potentially good news for you, or not?
Matt, I've been doing it 20 years. Did it look like it had been helping me?
I loved him saying that. I really loved it. The respect he showed to the profession. You know, naming no names, but there are certain tennis players, ex-tennis players, soon to be less ex-tennis players, that just assume that commentators and people in the media are just failed tennis players.
What are you saying about Kevin Anderson
and Riley Opelka?
No, that's a gag about the fact that Kevin Anderson announced he's coming out of retirement today.
Did he?
Yeah. I didn't put it in the agenda, David, because no one's ready for it, but seeing as it's come up.
I mean, I barely remember him retiring.
Well, you don't need to, because it's irrelevant now. Yeah. Anyway, so someone who shall remain nameless said that recently about the media, didn't they? And it didn't go down brilliantly in these circles. So I love hearing the way Christopher Eubanks talks about that experience. Mm. And I just love Christopher Eubanks. He's a wonderful story. And it's a bit like the way we talked about Liam Brody yesterday, from a very British perspective. He's America's Liam Brody, isn't he? Although possibly with a lot higher ceiling than Liam Brody, let's be honest.
Yeah, he's certainly got a bigger game. And he really brought that to bear on court one against Cameron Norrie today. It felt to me, this match, like the difference between a player who's confident and a player who's not at the moment. Honestly, Cameron Norrie has not played well for a few months now, really since Indian Wells. He had a brilliant start to the year, Cameron Norrie. Someone may or may not have put him in the mix to win the Australian Open. I can't honestly remember whether you did. But
then I evened it out by saying he produced the worst performance I'd ever seen.
Right, exactly.
A few weeks later.
At Roland Garros. He's been in worst performance you've ever seen territory for a while. And Christopher Eubanks is full of confidence, exactly as you said, coming off his maiden title in Mallorca just last week. And in all the big moments, he stepped up and just went for it. Just took the match from Cameron Norrie. It was pretty spellbinding to watch. Actually, he I always forget that he's got a single-handed backhand. The point he made about commentary helping him was that what it really does is helps him not get down on himself after making errors and unforced errors, because he's able to sort of zoom out and say, well, if I was in the commentary box, I would analyse that as, actually, that's not a bad error, because I went for the right shot, or I did the right thing, I just missed. whereas he used to, you know, always just get down on himself if he was making errors. So I thought it was a really interesting point. And yeah, that is an opportunity for Christopher Eubanks and OG sensation Christopher O'Connell to reach round four at Wimbledon. That's huge for both of them.
He is 28 in the race, Christopher Eubanks.
You've been into the race today.
Big day for the race, guys. Hope you're enjoying the race chat, because it is going to come up again just before it does come
so
up.
Exciting.
Actually, no, it's going to come up again here. Let's complete the British men's trifecta of doom, shall we? Because Liam Brody also lost today. We had Murray, Norrie and Brody all losing within... Well, Murray and Norrie lost within about a 20-minute period, and then about an hour later, Liam Brody followed. A valiant effort from him, won the first set against Denis Shapovalov, lost the subsequent three. So that's Shapovalov through to round four at Wimbledon, taking advantage of the opportunity that we knew was there for him, but none of us trusted him to take advantage of. Because, can I tell you where Denis Shapovalov is in the race?
Yes.
What would you guess?
64.
Oh, okay. Well, that's annoyingly close. He's 72 in the race. 72. On this year's results, he's the 72nd best player.
Well, that feels about right. I mean, he's been terrible, in all honesty, to this point in this year. He is just... But now he's got himself into, what is it, third round?
Fourth round.
He's in the last 16 of Wimbledon. This is a guy who beat Andy Murray to get to the semi-finals, didn't he, on his way there. And he actually put up a decent performance against Novak Djokovic. The tennis is in there somewhere. Somebody's got to get it out. I have to say, I still don't hold out much hope for it in any short-term scenario. Credit to him for getting to the fourth round, but I did see quite a bit of that match, and Liam Brody really shouldn't be living with him, a guy of his talent, and it was close. But still, he won. So let's see if he can do any more than where he is now. Who's he got?
He's got Roman Safiulin.
Oh, well, that's a good draw. I mean, and again, now I'm dissing Roman Safiulin, who's got himself into the fourth round. But on paper, that should be a good draw, shouldn't it?
Yeah, there are good draws and there are bad draws. People can defy their draws and opposite. Yeah. But Daniil Medvedev today finished off what looked like was going to be a win yesterday over Adrian Mannarino. You can't lose to somebody that's serving underarm serves that bounce before the net. You can't do that.
And you didn't lose to me when I did something very similar
no,
to that.
No, that was an overarm serve that bounced before the net. Don't know that if that's... Don't know.
What do you think? Underarm serve bouncing before
need
the
a
net's
split
worse.
Screen.
I genuinely think it is worse to underarm serve.
Yeah, me too.
I think you're right.
Yeah.
So. He was asked after the win, Medvedev, if he's at home on grass now.
Mm.
And he said, getting there, I'm at the door, I'm not inside yet.
Love Medvedev.
Maybe he'll get inside tomorrow. He places Marton Fucsovics.
Yes, which...
Which you think will be tricky.
I do. I mean, I rate Fucsovics. I mean, he played that brilliant first set against Djokovic at Roland Garros, didn't he? He's still got good tennis in him, I think. And, yeah, Medvedev is not quite fully comfortable on this surface yet. So I do think that's a bit tricky. I was impressed with Medvedev today because we watched him a couple of years ago be in this exact situation against Hubert Hurkacz, where he was, you know, a match was suspended and he had to come back the next day.
This is the Hubert Hurkacz pod, isn't it? Last night was the Casper Ruud pod. All the big names, guys.
Except we've generally been a bit nicer about Hubert. Just at the moment.
Sorry, Matt, as you were.
Well, on that day, Medvedev came out really flat the next day against Hurkacz. And there was absolutely none of that today. He was a little on the edge. You know, I think he knew that Mannarino was very dangerous, but he was also extremely focused and absolutely was not going to let happen again what happened to him against Hurkacz. And yeah, I mean, I'm enjoying Medvedev this tournament. And yeah, I mean, he's not won Wimbledon before, and we know he doesn't win events twice.
Oh, yes.
So
yes. Get inside that door, Daniil.
Yeah, I think he's closer to being at home on grass than he thinks.
Is he in the mix?
No, because it's a mix of one, which is.
So you're just discounting Alcaraz from the mix as well?
I would be surprised if
Alcaraz beat Novak Djokovic here.
Come on, it's a mix of one. I would be surprised if anybody other than Novak Djokovic won Wimbledon.
Yeah.
That was the case prior to this tournament, and it's very much the case now.
I wouldn't be surprised if Carlos Alcaraz won any tournament ever.
Even with Novak Djokovic in the draw?
Yeah. Because if he got to the final, he's flying.
He was flying at Roland Garros.
I know. He's going to learn. That's okay. That's my feeling.
I think he will learn, but...
I think... Yeah.
Novak Djokovic is...
Look.
I also said Stan Wawrinka was playing mind games and Andy Murray was going to have a good run.
Guys, we've got 9 more of these pods.
Yes, sorry. Okay.
Plus 2 live shows before the final.
We're using final material already.
Save your best material for matches we don't even know are happening yet. I mentioned Alcaraz won today, first up on centre court. His first ever centre court win, wasn't it, over Alexander Muller. Unspectacular, but got the job done. Muller just sort of wouldn't go away, would he?
Yeah, that's right. I think an important moment for Alcaraz to get his first centre court win. I was reminded today of just how much he said playing on centre court last year against Sinner. It was the first time he played on it and he lost that match. And he said he was almost intimidated by it. He found it really difficult. It was not only did he have a handful with Sinner playing well, but he wasn't comfortable in his surroundings. So I think it's a big moment for him to finally get that first win on centre court. The drop shot was back. It wasn't there really in his first round match. He wasn't really playing it. Today he was playing it all the time and he was winning loads of points off that shot. And yeah, I think a pretty good test for him actually, because Muller played really, really well, and Alcaraz, you know, was forced to weather a couple of storms and really have to find his best tennis in the tiebreak that they played, and he did all of that. It was just a very solid win for Alcaraz.
And he's got Nicholas Jarry next, and you're our resident Nicholas Jarry guy.
Yes, he's both sort of dead to me because he didn't get to the quarterfinals at Roland Garros when I
needed him to,
and yet I do also still rate him and think he's good.
Look, Matt and I have desks next to one another here, and he's always talking about Nicholas Jarry.
In what context?
Just like whenever he comes up or is on a scoreboard, oh, he's really good, you know. Nicholas Jarry's type,
do you think,
man.
He's got a chance against Alcaraz? I mean, like, what's his percentage chances as we sit here?
I know
right
you
now?
Think Nicholas Jarry does have a chance against Alcaraz.
Do I? I mean, I'm also an Alcaraz guy, aren't I? I'm more of an Alcaraz guy than I am a Nicholas Jarry guy.
This is revisionist history. You said earlier, I'm a bit worried about Nicholas Jarry for Alcaraz.
That I did not say that those was words.
That was me who said that.
Was it?
Yeah, we were having dinner. I said that.
Good chat, David. I remember it fondly. Holger Rune is through to round 3 without dropping a set. He now plays Alejandro Davidovic Fekina, which sounds, I've written in caps here, fun.
Fun.
Yeah.
Big time.
Really up for that match. Next talking point I have, I want to rattle through these men's talking points, just a couple more left before we get to the women. Is Matteo Berrettini back? He beat Alex de Minaur today in 3 straight sets.
I mean, that's a great scoreline. I didn't watch the match. But having seen him beat Sonego, I know it was a tight one, I did think he's the guy with the pedigree, isn't he?
Oh, it's a total game changer if Berrettini is back. Because that guy knows how to play on a grass court. He's won 34 of his last 38 matches on grass.
Oh, what a story. And what a story if he suddenly has a run.
Totally. And he was very, very good today. I was reminded of a quote that Alex de Minaur gave after playing Matteo Berrettini at Queens a couple of years ago, where he says, it's just what happens when you play a bigger, taller guy. It's going to happen a lot in my career. God gave me this body. It's not like I'm going to grow overnight.
We've all said that in front of the mirror.
Maybe Matteo Berrettini hasn't. But I mean,
probably ads.
Berrettini just was able to impose himself, impose his weapons on this match. He won all of his first serve points in the first set and the third set. And what I was most impressed with was how quickly he came out of the blocks in every set and got a break. Because then it was like, for Dumanoir, oh, how am I going to win this set? I've got to break this guy's serve now. And it was just such a tall order against him. And yeah, Berrettini is sort of saying all these things, like he wasn't mentally and emotionally ready for Wimbledon because of what happened to him in Stuttgart, and he's still recovering, and he hadn't even served that match coming into this tournament. And yet, he's also saying, I'm actually feeling good, you know, and I'm playing really well. And he was. And his draw is a nightmare. I'm an absolute nightmare if he's going to make real progress in this tournament. He's got Alexander Zverev next. Then he would have probably Carlos Alcaraz or Nicolas Jarry. And then, you know, Tiafoe or Rune or Medvedev. That's all before, you know, even thinking about the final. It feels like a very long way off for him to actually string together so many big wins after not playing for so long. But in each isolated match, he suddenly feels like a threat again. And I didn't think he was a threat at this tournament at all because of just how bad he was in Stuttgart a few weeks ago.
It would be justice for Matteo Berrettini. I still feel awful for him, what happened last year, coming in the best possible form, having won Queens, having won Stuttgart, with the experience of having reached the final the previous year, and he gets COVID.
He said he still thinks about that. He said of all the, he didn't use the word, but I'm going to use it, of all the curses that have happened in his career, I think that's the one that really hurts the most.
Absolutely brutal. Mm. Brutal stroke of luck. Last thing I have on the men's is that Jannik Sinner threw safely, did drop a set to Quentin Alice. I think Quentin Alice is tricky on grass and has had a really good year. Did look up where he was in the race as well, but I won't bore you with that. He's out of the tournament. And he's got Daniel Galan for a place in the quarterfinals, Jannik Sinner. Look, he's doing the job, and easy draws aren't always easy draws, as previously discussed, but he's getting a good draw here, but he is making the most of it. So
yeah,
let's see.
I mean, he should be making further progress. Just one thing that occurs to me, with all the players that you've read out who are playing people we know, and getting to know a few extra players because of
Nicolas Jarry,
of them having a run. Nicolas Jarry, Roman Safiulin, Daniel Galan. These are players maybe that I wouldn't think about that much, but now they're going to have a big match. So I'm quite looking forward to that. But I also would like to see Jannik Sinner make progress through and end up meeting the respective opponents that he seeded to, because it's about time he took it to the next level, really, because he's done well, he's shown what he's got, but he's yet to win one of these big ones, one of these big matches on a big stage.
I want him to do it too, because he's so rated, Jannik Sinner, and I rate his talent as highly as anybody. I see the talent, I see that Darren Cahill is there. I know that Darren Cahill wouldn't be there if he was seeing even more talent than we see behind the scenes in terms of attitude and commitment. I see all of that, and I think he's got the goods, and I think he is going to be a Grand Slam champion. He hasn't done any of it yet. He hasn't ever reached a Grand Slam semi-final. He hasn't won a Masters 1000. He hasn't done anything, and he's not, and this is fine, he's also not Mr. Charisma that's getting headlines for other things besides his results. And he does get, you know, he's played his first match on centre court, he played his second match on court one. He gets big billing, and I think part of that is his rivalry with Carlos Alcaraz, which boosts both of them, and I love that as much as anybody. But I would like to see him substantiate that billing that he gets, and it be about real time results rather than just talent and promise.
He's going to have to do it quite soon, I think, because otherwise he will stop getting those billings. Mm.
When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second-guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Hey, it's Danny Pellegrino from Everything Iconic. Ready to upgrade your style game without blowing your budget? Check out Quince. They've got all the good stuff, shirts and polos, activewear and fine leather goods, all at 50 to 80% less than other high-end brands. And the best part? They're all about safe, ethical and responsible manufacturing. Get that luxury vibe without the luxury price tag. Hit up quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. That's quince.com/upgrade.
This edition of the Tennis Podcast is sponsored by Tennis Channel, and Tennis Channel Plus is the place to watch the French Open. They've got every court live, and you can watch on your phone or your smart TV, both in HD. Matt, this sounds like your kind of thing.
Yeah, there's nothing I like more than watching multiple courts with matches everywhere, dipping in to where there's the latest final set tiebreak or even the latest bit of aggro.
And David, don't worry, you can just watch your favourite court, Suzanne Lenglen, all day if you want. But whatever you choose, the French Open promises unforgettable moments and new chapters in tennis history.
Do you know, I think in a lot of ways, the French Open is now my favourite slam. It's the strategy of the clay court tennis, the way it challenges players, and particularly now with legends of the game up against a new generation of young players. I cannot wait.
Be there when it happens, with daily live coverage beginning on Monday, May the 20th. Subscribe to Tennis Channel Plus to stream daily coverage of Roland Garros. Use promo code TENNISPOD20 for 20% off your annual subscription. Let's talk about the women's draw, and let's start with a match that got set up today. Because tomorrow, on centre court... we are going to get to see Ange Jabeur against Bianca Andreescu. And just like Matthew behind the camera there, who gave us a little woohoo, I've got butterflies in my tummy just thinking about this. I'm so hyped for this match.
Hell yes. Yeah, it's a huge yes, please. Didn't see Ange Jabeur's match today. It was over in a flash.
Blink and you missed it.
Yeah.
6-1, 6-1.
Yeah, but Bianca Andreescu's match was sort of everything a Bianca Andreescu match should be, really. She was winning pretty straightforwardly against Angelina Kalinina, setting a break, and then went off the boil and suddenly found herself down in that third set. But then came the surge, and... I mean, there's not many things better in tennis than a Bianca Andreescu surge. And she said afterwards, and apologies to David's mum, apologies to the live stream, but I'm just going to have to read what she said in the transcript. She said, "I wanted to go for it, because when I'm passive and hesitant, that's when I don't play my best tennis. I said, fuck it, and I just went for it. That's when I play my best tennis, but I need to gain the confidence to do that continuously." And it felt like we were seeing her gain that confidence as the match went on, and her play in the start of that tiebreak, which was obviously a match tiebreak, first to 10, and she built just this incredibly commanding lead, and she was absolutely brilliant in those first few moments of that tiebreak. Got a little tight, got a little edgy, of course, but she got over the line.
Yeah, it was, 9-3? And we were all just talking about how good Jabeur Andreescu is going to be. And then it got to 9-6 and we all went, oh, have we?
So it was what have we done? We pretty much stopped paying attention to the score whilst we hyped Andreescu and Jabeur. I am a little bit concerned that Jabeur might just take her to the cleaners.
Yeah, I mean, if anybody's going to take anyone to the cleaners, it's that way around. I think it could be epic. I don't see Andreescu taking Jabeur to the cleaners, but
no.
Could happen the other way around. But I...
Let's be positive.
Did you keep across Andreescu's press conference? Because if not, I've got good news to break to you. She is, at, for the first time this tournament, being followed by the Netflix cameras. Yeah.
Wow.
So,
well, I did hear that this year they're being a bit more fluid with who they're following. And she said, didn't she, at the French Open, that she was asked last year and she declined. And but she had hoped that she'd be asked again this year because she would have liked to do it. So, look, I think whether it's... Look, obviously, everyone knows I love Andreescu, but whether it's Andreescu or someone similar in her position, I think that is an open goal for Netflix to follow someone trying to find something that they once had.
And frankly, even just the backstage interviews that they might do at her house or wherever she is, she's somebody I think has just got so much to tell us about from the last 4 years, and I'd love to know about it.
Yeah, really glad to hear that. They're following Mira Andreeva as well,
yes,
aren't they?
Which I'm very pleased about. She's... Yeah, everything she says is kind of a bit dreamy. And
Does that not worry you at all with her being as young as she is? That does a little bit.
I have concerns. Yeah,
I mean, I find her great fun. I love when she does her press conferences, but she's young.
It's all about the people that are around her, and I don't know enough about those people to know how concerned I should be. Mm. So we'll see. Thank you for pooping on the party, though, David. You watched Elena Svitolina today continue her incredible comeback into the second week of back-to-back slams now today at the expense of Sofia Kenin, who I think hit the wall a little bit. Is that too reductive?
Maybe a bit. Here's what happened. Kenin went up 3-1 in the match and she had points for 4-1 double break. And she was playing fantastically well. She was... Her upper level, I would say, is probably higher than Svitolina. I mean, she's the one who's won the Grand Slam and reached another Grand Slam final. And her drop shot is absolutely lethal. And she hurt Svitolina probably 4 times with her drop shot. And she was hitting winners all over the place. But then she sat down when she didn't break for 4-1. And she looked so on the edge. She's hyping herself up. She's talking to herself. And it discomforted me a little to watch it. I'm thinking it's such a fine line between being pumped and being anxious. And she came out, she immediately lost the serve to Love. And from there on, it was a sort of battle. And I was really curious to see whether this Svitolina that I've heard about, this more aggressive, more hitting out on a shot Svitolina, was a thing, because I haven't seen her play in person since she's come back. And she went right into lockdown mode. She saw what was going on down the other end of the court and she just refused to miss. She won the tiebreak. Second set, totally different. Svitolina loosened up and she hit so many winners. I'm telling you, it was quite eye-opening to me. I have not seen a play like that before, ever. She hit 20-odd winners in the course of the match. You know, I think she'd hit something like 8 forehand winners, 5 backhand winners in sort of a set and a half, and the rest volleys and whatnot. But she was brilliant in the second set, absolutely took it away from Kenin. And they had Raymond Slaughter, her coach, up there, who's somebody we've seen coaching Kiki Burton, somebody I got to know on the ATP Tour when I was a communications manager. He was a top 50 player. He's just a good guy. He's just a good tennis brain, but just good presence. And I love seeing what she's doing with her game. It's different. She's using it sparingly. She's not just going out trying to hit winners all the time, but that showed she's got something in her game. And maybe he's found a way to help her unlock it. Maybe her coming back to the sport after a time away has made her free up. I don't know why, but there's something different.
She's got Victoria Azarenka next, who upset Daria Kazatkina today. An upset in terms of seeding, obviously. Azarenka is the two-time Grand Slam champion there, but I rate Kazatkina on grass. I think that's a big win for Azarenka, and I I love the sound of Svitolina Azarenka.
5-0, the head-to-head for Azarenka. I was really taken aback when I looked at that. I mean, there's been some close matches in there, and they do go over a long spell of time, probably when Azarenka was more or less at her peak and Svitolina was coming up as well. But even so, you know, a player of her level, she's been 3 in the world. Surprising that she's lost all 5.
Mm. Interesting. Can't wait for that match. That is one that isn't tomorrow. Right, there's a lot of matches I'm talking about here that were set up today that are being played tomorrow because rain, including Andreescu Djerba, of course, which is on centre court tomorrow. But I think Svitolina Azarenka is Sunday.
Correct.
Great. speaking of hitting the wall, Donna Vekic today. Matt and I were sitting watching her match against Marketa Vondrousova today at our desks, and I had this moment of, is it yesterday? It feels like 20 seconds ago that we were sat here in this very position watching Donna Vekic. And if that's how we felt about that turnaround, imagine how Donna Vekic felt
it's definitely how Donna Vekic felt about it. I think she looked uncomfortable straight away, to be honest, in this match. I think there was probably a physical element of, you know, it was a pretty grueling match yesterday against Stevens. But more than anything, I think just an emotional element of how quick that turnaround was from such a big win. And, you know, it was a victory yesterday against Stevens, but she went through a lot in that match. You know, she was in tears on the court. That's not something that you can just brush off. That, I think, takes some sort of getting over and some working through, to be honest. And against Marketa Vondrousova, who is completely inexplicable, but we know the upper limits of her game and her talent are so high, and she displayed them today. Vekic did manage to break back when Vondrousova was serving for the match the first time, like she did against Stevens, and I thought, okay, here we go again, maybe she's going to be able to get herself going. But she didn't. She didn't have it in her for that real surge that she displayed yesterday. And Vondrousova was a pretty deserving winner, I think.
It's Marie Buzkova next for her. Buzkova having beaten Caroline Garcia 7-5 in the third in a match that was moved from court 18 at a set all to be completed under the roof, under the lights on court number one. And what a set of tennis. Everybody on court number one. I assume that was mostly not court one ticket holders, and it was mostly people that got a grounds pass and just got lucky having stayed around all night. It was an extraordinary third set.
They were actually putting up signs saying anybody can come in now into court number one, which was great, and just what you want to see them do. And I was watching on the screen and living every moment, and particularly with Buzkova's mum and watching her and going through it, you know. Those are the scenes, aren't they?
In Tennis Faces news, I think Marie Buzkova's mum might give me and Yelena Ostapenko a run for our money.
And that's saying something.
She gives good reaction, doesn't she?
Yeah, she really did. Didn't she have her phone out ready to record match point? And then we've all been there. The moment you're waiting for doesn't happen, and she's still ploughed on.
We've got some tweets in draft.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, it's very much a tweet in draft.
It's just she was caught on camera.
Yeah, she was such a mood, and I always find it's totally unrelatable when nearest and dearest coaches even are able to sit in players' boxes with their poker faces on. Admirable and extraordinary, but very unrelatable. I find it far more human, if you like, to see someone giving what Marie Buzkova's mum was giving in that match. Marie Buzkova, incidentally, news just in on her. She's got her own logo, folks.
Okay. How do we feel about that?
Oh, well, I know how Catherine feels.
And what does it
feel like? Brilliant about that. I mean, Marie Buzkova does seem to be, like, the nicest person in tennis. Nobody has a bad word to say about her. In fact, this tidbit of information arose from my Marie Buzkova contact just messaging me to say, oh, I'm so pleased for Marie. She's just absolutely delightful. Everyone loves her. Everyone in the locker room loves her. And I said, oh, yeah, that's good to know. I feel like we're always saying just how nice she is. That's what you say about Marie Buskova. Have you got anything else for me? Yes, she's got a logo.
You've been very gentle on Marie Buskova there compared to very nice people, Felix Auger-Aliassime and Jannik Sinner.
Yeah, she shouldn't have a logo.
The treatment they got.
No, she shouldn't have a logo. One Grand Slam quarter final? Absurd. Check yourself, Marie.
There we go.
Iga Świątek faced a tiny bit of jeopardy today. Just a teeny tiny bit of jeopardy against Petra Martic today.
Yeah, definitely. This was a tricky match that she got under control, but then it really felt like this was going to go to a deciding set. Świątek served for it at 5-4 in the second set, got broken to love. And then Martic went up 40 love in the very next game. So Martic had won 7 points in a row just when you thought that Świątek was about to win it. And it really felt like it was turning. But then suddenly Martic started to get really tight and Świątek found a few returns and managed to break back and then serve it out. But yeah, this was a match, and I'm sure we'll come on to talk about Aryna Sabalenka as well. But it was, I just found it interesting today that there's a lot of talk. I'm not sure I'm sort of into the idea, I just don't like the term necessarily, about, you know, big three on the WTA. But I, you know, those three players have separated themselves. And it struck me today that Iga Świątek and Aryna Sabalenka did big three sort of stuff. You know, they weren't at their best. They weren't playing all that well. And yet they managed to win. And that is the absolute marker of what really good players do. And it's a marker of what those players have been doing all season, because they've been going really deep in tournaments regularly. They've not been tripping up early. And that was a little bit tricky against Petra Martic today. And I think it is again in the next round against Belinda Bencic, who is not someone at the start of the tournament that I really thought about in Iga Świątek's draw, just because she's barely won any matches recently. But she always says she likes grass. She's played Świątek tough in the past, earlier this year in United Cup. That was a very close match, albeit straight sets, but the second set was really close. And Bencic was playing really well at the start of the year before she got injured, before she split with Dmitry Tursunov. There's been a bit of turmoil, I think, recently. But we know how good Bencic can be. And suddenly that now feels like a real test for Iga Świątek to me.
Yeah, can't wait for that match. Honestly, first real test for Iga Świątek. Look, Martic was great today, but that's a step up and I want to see it. You mentioned Sabalenka, so let's go there. She had to serve to stay in the match today against Varvara Krejcová. In fact, it was Hannah's tweet saying Aryna Sabalenka is about to serve to stay in Wimbledon that made me go, right, I should probably watch that. What was happening?
I was on the court next door at the time. I was on court number 12. That was going on court number 2, and they're actually side by side. And you could feel this murmur going around from that court that there's something developing, and people on our court were sort of craning their necks behind to have a look over into the other court. And, I wasn't able to watch the actual tennis, but I do like a player under threat like that who finds a way out.
Yeah, and that has been a Sabalenka feature, really. You know, we've talked in the past how she has got this extraordinary record of losing the first set in a slam and ending up winning it. Obviously, she didn't manage to do that against Mukova at Roland Garros recently. But honestly, I went over to the court when she was a set down 6-2. It had been a terrible first set. She just, you know, it was just so many unforced errors from Sabalenka. Just Sabalenka sort of at her worst, really. So I went over to the court and it was kind of a tale of three Sabalenka roars. There was one midway through the second set where it was like she needed to get it out of her system, that how angry she was. And she actually said in the press conference afterwards that she had the presence of mind to let out this huge roar rather than smash her racket because she didn't want to damage the grass. And she said, yeah, I just needed to express some emotion and loosen up because she was just an error machine. And then there was another one a bit later in the second set, which felt like one of real defiance. You know, she'd got this match back on track. And then there was one in the third set, which was almost one of triumph, where she had finally taken over. And she said afterwards that what was really troubling her was the fact that she had the wrong string tension, because, you know, let's be honest, I'm in short sleeves today rather than wrapped up in a coat. It's been a much hotter day today.
It's been a very bizarre week of weather.
Right, but it's been very different conditions today to what they've been training in and practicing in all week, you know, where it's been wet and damp and cold.
That was socks in bed 2 nights ago. In July. I don't wear socks in bed in the winter. Anyway.
So she said she was overhitting in the first set, just completely overhitting, completely unable to control her ball, needed to change her strings, did so mid-match, got it under control. And yeah, this is Sabalenka 2023. This is Sabalenka 2.0. She is able to steady matches when they look like they're going out of her control. And it's a really compelling watch to see her do that.
She gets the train back on the tracks. Mm. Jessica Pegula is just trucking along really well, fairly unnoticed.
Continuing the sort of train analogy there.
I arrived on her court because I was doing the Svitolina match, which was after Pegula. So I arrived for her on-court interview, and to hear her talk about how grass and Wimbledon is the one that she'd yet to conquer, the one that she's had all these results and everywhere else, but this is the first time she's, I think, into the second week of Wimbledon. And she was really chuffed about it. You know, you could tell that this is... And she was also quite detailed about how, yes, she looks like she's got this poker face on the court, but she's actually a bit of a wreck underneath, and that it's all going on. You know, she's boiling inside, but... I'm pleased that she's making progress too, because yes, she might not be part of that three, but she's been part of the story, hasn't she? The little group generally that have been battling out for a year and a half.
She's got Lucia Cerenko next for a place in the Wimbledon quarterfinals, which, look, Cerenko's having a great year, some good results, but again, it's on paper, good draw. I'm going to defer to Matt here to tell you about how Cerenko booked her place in this fourth round match, because while all sorts of dramatic stuff involving big names was happening earlier on today, including Andy Murray on centre court, Matt was just engrossed in Anna Bogdan. Honestly, couldn't tear him away from Anna
Bogdan.
Formerly
of the backhand list.
Well, it was all my favourite things. It was a former backhand list person in Anna Bogdan. And it was a final set tiebreak. And not just any final set tiebreak. The ITF had the line that it was the longest tiebreak in women's Grand Slam history in terms of points played. Ended up being 2018, I think, to Lucia Cerenko.
Wow.
And I'll tell you why that's a good draw for Jessica Pegula, because Lucia Cerenko could barely walk after this match. I mean, that was 3 hours... 40 minutes or so.
And the tiebreak alone was 35 minutes?
Yeah, maybe even pushing 40 minutes.
Wow.
It was unbelievable. And yeah, I mean, I have a fondness for all players who are either on my backhand list or have previously been on it, and Anna Bogdan is one of those.
She probably doesn't have a fondness for you, having been kicked off the backhand list.
Who replaced her?
I bumped her off for Coco Gauff. But, you know, she wasn't... She wasn't in my consciousness too much, because she wasn't winning too many matches.
It's a ruthless business.
Can't wait to hear more about the time when Anna Bogdan was in your consciousness. What a time. So, sorry, Matt, but Bogdan is out. Mm. The heartbreaking way to go out.
Yeah.
Cerenko through to face Pegula. You wrote Brengel exclamation mark into the agenda. There I am doing the agenda, and then I come back to edit it and I find Matt added in a bit of Madison Brengel, who lost today. Why would you like to talk about her?
Well, I think there sort of comes a time in every Grand Slam day where I'm less concerned about what's good and more concerned about what's funny. And when Madison Brengel's playing, she's the funny sweet spot. And what was funny about this is that Ekaterina Alexandrova won this match, despite hitting 91 unforced errors.
No.
Yeah. Madison Brengel won 131 points. 91 of them were unforced errors from Alexandrova. And, you know, it was three tie breaks, which had never happened before at Wimbledon. Very rare. Only happened a handful of times in slams. It was just a funny match. You know, there was Sabalenka was losing, Berrettini was coming back and happening, and yet I was drawn to Alexandrova sort of unforced erroring her way to victory.
91.
I enjoyed it. 91.
Wow.
I love it.
Last line of the day, former Wimbledon champion Petra Kvitova won today 2-2 versus Sasnovic, and future Wimbledon champion Julia Niemeyer did not win today. She lost 6-1 in the third to Dalma Galfi, which, Hannah, isn't necessarily the CV of a future Wimbledon champion. We'd love to know if Hannah still believes after that.
Well, it was tough for her, as it was for, as we talked about with Vekic earlier, you know, a lot of players having to do double duty in consecutive days. You know, it was the same for a lot of players, but I think some players will respond better to that than others. And honestly, I think that's such a good thing to have said from Hannah, future Wimbledon champion, because it's wonderfully vague. Like, I mean, it's very specific in a way. Wimbledon champion is bold.
But until the day she retires,
it's always
that
possible.
Prediction is in play.
It is, like,
isn't it a bit like baby fed? Hasn't she got to live with that tag for the next 10 years?
I'd be surprised if she's aware of it, but sure.
She's going to be.
Yeah, it's like, well, Hannah's like, well, I didn't say it would happen now. So doesn't matter that she's gone out. It's
Hannah
the future.
Says in the chat, I absolutely still believe. That's why the accolade is future
exactly.
Wimbledon champion.
Yeah, I'm with you, Hannah.
Can right. I also say, just very quickly, one thing directed towards the chat is that people like to follow the progress of our beer drinking, and they might have noticed that I've remained at this level for about the last 40 minutes. That's because there's a flying ant in it.
Is it flying ant day?
Yeah.
I think it's going to be tomorrow.
Oh, great. It's going to get worse.
Oh, joy.
Yeah. I think it might. It's always during Wimbledon, obviously. Yeah.
So I'm a bit disappointed.
I think today has been the precursor to flying ant day. It's been a very insecty.
You don't want to. I thought about it.
I think I won the race today, but I did have a bit of a head start. There we go. Right. How about...
L race.
I told you it was going to be a big day for the race. How about tomorrow's order of play, which is in 1 minute's time going to be today's order of play, because it is 11:59 p.m. Alcaraz against Jarry, centre court, right where Nicholas Jarry belongs. Ons Jabeur against Bianca Andreescu, second on, and
yes,
then Katie
please.
Bolter against Elena Rybakina. Love that order of play on centre tomorrow. Medvedev against Vucevic, first on one. Blinkova, Sabalenka, and then Berrettini, Zverev. We got Petra Kvitova, Stefanos Tsitsipas, and then Tiafoe Dimitrov, third on court two today. Love that matchup. Haddad Maia, Castella, Davidovic, Fekina, Runa is second on court three tomorrow. Reggie's queuing again tonight, so maybe he'll head to court three for that. Mira Andreeva against Anna Potapova. Tommy Paul is on court 12. Kostyuk, Keys.
It's so funny, this Wimbledon. There are players who I haven't even sort of noticed yet, like Tommy Paul. And yet Stefanos Tsitsipas seems to be playing every minute of the tournament so far. It's very confusing.
He's playing again tomorrow, isn't he? And he's playing doubles again tomorrow because his men's doubles with brother Petros, brackets, lucky to be here.
Hardest working man in tennis.
Brackets, hardest working man in tennis.
He seems to have some sort of coaching role from what I can see in there.
We were on such a Tsitsipas high today.
Anyway,
so well.
They've got to come back and play. They were suspended due to bad light, so Tsitsipas is just everywhere, whereas Tommy Paul is completely flying under the radar. Look, we'll make an effort to watch some of the people that have gone unnoticed so far tomorrow. But that is tomorrow. That's what you've got to look forward to. Cracking lineup. I think, is that the juniors getting started tomorrow? Can't engage with that yet. Going to file that in the same place I filed Kevin Anderson's comeback. for later. We have our Wimbledon mascot, Erin. Hello, Erin. Lovely, lovely cat, Erin. Thank you, Daryl, for bringing Erin into our lives, our Wimbledon lives. We have our mascots. I've got Xenia. David's got Maisie.
Yeah, hi, Maisie. I think I'm just disgracing ourselves at the moment. But I'm just living off that one great Kenin prediction. Everything since then has
coming
gone
for you.
Pretty badly wrong.
We're coming for you, Xenia. So. Matt's got Darwin.
Yep, we made slow progress, but some progress
today.
Did
you get yourself on the board with picking Novak Djokovic or something?
No, I picked Hans Jabeur, who lost two games.
Right, okay.
Billie Jean is sponsored by Billie Jean King and Alana Kloss. I saw Billie Jean briefly earlier on today. Lovely.
And Billie Jean King.
And Billie Jean King, not at the same time, sadly. We have our top folks and executive producers, Jamie, Hannah, Andrew and Matt. We have shout-outs.
We've got Carol Hooper, who is in Orpington.
Hi, Carol.
Orpington is in Surrey. Kent. Kent, says Matthew. It is Kent. Very good. Thank you, Carol.
Like Carol.
Hi, this is Craig Robinson from Ways to Win. And support for this podcast comes from Invesco QQQ. Invesco QQQ is proud to sponsor this episode and even prouder to provide access to innovation for the last 25 years. Basketball has had innovations over the years, too. We're seeing the game played in new ways every day. Learn more at Invesco.com/QQQ. Let's rethink possibility. Invesco Distributors, Inc.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Zhao.
Who's that?
She is Canadian. Oh. Tennis player.
Oh. Okay.
Thank you, Carol.
Thank you, Carol.
I've covered a lot of Billie Jean King Cup.
I'm glad you have, because I was really struggling.
Who's next,
Thanks,
Matt.
Carol.
Next, we have Sarah Yeiser.
Hello,
from
Sarah.
Washington, D.C.
Right, Sarah.
Hello, Sarah.
Sarah says, I've been listening since 2020. I've been working my way through older episodes and recently listened to the one recorded after Andy Murray's 2013 Wimbledon win. It was 10 years today,
wasn't it,
since Andy Murray won Wimbledon for the first time. So thank you, Sarah.
Thoughts and prayers with Carol.
With Sarah.
Sarah, I'm still thinking about Carol Zhao.
Sarah Gomer was a British player of the 80s, and I genuinely can't think of anybody more up to date. Which is extraordinary to think. There's a lot of Sarahs in the world. And
Sara Cerebes Tormo.
Okay, we'll go with that.
It's not great, is it? It's close.
Yeah.
Keep talking, Matt. I'm Googling.
Okay. Well, now we've got Cynthia Hugerslag.
Okay.
I think last year I just said Cynthia and wasn't bold enough to say the surname.
So
and
you thought live.
No.
Live was the time to do it.
She
told you off?
Told me off.
Excellent.
She wrote in our survey that we do to get the shout-outs, please attempt my surname next year. So quite not right. Only have I attempted it, I've attempted it live and no doubt butchered it. That was for you, Cynthia.
Yeah. Sarah Borwell.
Sarah Borwell. Very good, Catherine.
Former British player. Well,
done.
Very good, Google.
Yes,
thank
good
you,
job.
Google.
Now
we need a Cynthia.
Well, I can give you some background on this Cynthia. She is from the Netherlands, and the first professional tennis match she watched live was Tim Henman against Dominic Habarty in the ABN AMRO. I guess that's Rotterdam, is it?
I remember that. Yeah,
you remember that
match?
Yeah. That match?
Yeah.
Cynthia, what I have for you is Cynthia...
Of course I did. It's vaguely the 90s.
Derner, an Australian former international tennis player, competed in the Australian Open four times between 1973 and 1979. Born on the 11th of February, the day after me. I mean, not the day after me, several decades before me, but...
Carol Zhao isn't seeming so niche now.
And he got that from his head. See?
Thank you, Cynthia. Thank you, Carol. Thank you, Sarah. Thank you to all our friends of the Tennis Podcast that make this show possible year-round. If you would like to become a friend of the Tennis Podcast, then you can do that by following the link in our show notes. You'll be supporting us and you'll be getting tons of bonus content or, depending on how young you are, hashtag Bocco throughout the course of the year. Subscribe to the newsletter. It's excellent and
still
it's free.
Bocco,
the link, I'll never stop, David. The link to do that is also in our show notes. Smash that like and subscribe button if you're watching us on YouTube. What else? Leave us an Apple Podcast review if you fancy doing that and tell your friends. And most importantly, join us again tomorrow, however you're joining us. We're loving having your company and we will see you and speak to you then.